We have a visiting judge with us this morning due to our vacancy, and we, of course, welcome Senior Judge Walter Cox back to the court. Walter was a judge here for his full term and has served a number of times as a senior judge, and we welcome him back. First case we're going to call this morning is United States versus Gay. Both parties have appealed issues in this case, and according to Rule 40B2, when that occurs, the appellant goes first. So are you ready? Proceed.
Chief Judge Erdman, Senior Judge Cox, honorable members of the court. My name is Captain Lauren Shore. May it please the court. And along with Mr. Brian Miser, we represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Kevin Gay. Now, given that we're dealing with both the certified and specified issues, with the court's permission, I'd like to first address the specified issue that this court asked in their grant order. Now, while the appellant has never opposed a Dubé hearing in this case, the appellant does not assert that the Air Force Court erred in not granting the Dubé hearing because they properly evaluated the record and applied United States v. Ginn. Specifically, the Air Force Court determined that Ginn did not require a Dubé in this case because there were no conflicting affidavits. In fact, appellant's claims are virtually unrebutted by the government. The government has had well over a year to submit any additional evidence, and the only investigation that was done following these events was a few months after. And all the government did was submit an MFR, a memorandum for record, that did not dispute that appellant was placed in solitary confinement by the government officials.
How did they treat that, the unsworn memorandum from the Chief of Military Justice? It appears in the opinion, in the footnote, they said that since we're taking cognizance of this, well, I'm not sure exactly for what purpose they said that. But isn't that a little bit far afield from what Ginn requires, which is taking a look at affidavits?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. And generally what you would expect is to have two affidavits in a case, or competing affidavits, or at least agreement by the government in the form of some sworn statement. The Air Force Court, in fact, advised against this practice in that footnote, Your Honor. And what they indicated was...
But they did it.
They advised against the practice, but they did it anyway. Absolutely, Your Honor. And they said specifically, though, that they were simply considering it because it was a part of the record, but that normally, had it been submitted outside of the clemency phase, it would not be considered by them because it was not a sworn statement. So when you're left with that, even if you were to not consider that, you still have unrebutted claims by the appellant that raise to the level of a legal claim that entitle him to some relief.
What are the unrebutted claims? The only thing I can dig out of this, and it's pretty vague, is whether there was a curtain on the shower.
Well, Your Honor, that's the one disagreement between the parties.
Well, a disagreement. He said there wasn't a curtain, and they said there was a curtain.
Yes,
Your Honor. Of some sort.
Yes,
sir. Okay. Leaving aside whether this is all de minimis, is that it?
No, Your Honor. The specifics of his claim entailed him being placed into solitary confinement in order to avoid the Article 12 violation. That's when the movement to solitary confinement at the direction of the legal office occurred, which, as this court has declared in the past, is not appropriate. Additionally, his claims...
When did we declare that?
United States v. Wilson and McPherson recently, most recently, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Additionally, his claims involved the 23-hour lockdown and the shackles and strip searches that weren't appropriate. The shackles specifically going to an Article 55 violation.
Well, the shackle, now, that's also kind of unclear. Is he claiming he was shackled in the cell or simply going to and fro?
I believe, Your Honor... The most fair reading of his statements are that he was just shackled going to and fro. I don't think there's any indication.
And that's, I mean, I know what 55 says, but isn't that kind of standard procedure when somebody's in solitary confinement?
That's what the confinement facility says, Your Honor.
That's what the confinement facility says.
But there's no dispute about that fact.
There is not, Your Honor. In fact,
there's also no dispute about the fact that he was in lockdown for 23 hours.
No dispute, Your Honor.
And there's no dispute that the reason that he was placed in his solitary confinement wasn't because of any misbehavior on his part, but rather solely because the Air Force decided to contract out its services to a civilian facility and that he was in contact with a foreign national.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no dispute there.
Counsel, go ahead, Look. He, according to what I read in the court-martial order and so forth, his confinement was reduced to, what, 5 months and 21 days?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
And it wasn't even promulgated until 5 months and 21 days after he was confined. So he actually served that whole time, did he not?
Yes, Your Honor, he did.
Yeah. And what's he doing now?
Your Honor, he's out. He served his entire time in confinement.
But you haven't been in touch with, you don't know if he could show up for a DuBay hearing or not?
No, I do, Your Honor. He could show up for a DuBay hearing. Yes, absolutely.
And so, but he wouldn't have to show up in more confinement?
No, Your Honor, he would not.
Have we ever decided that there's a concept of harmless error applied to the government?
Your Honor, I'm uncertain as to that. I'd have to check and get back to the court.
Another question. If we answered the certified question in the negative, meaning that we say the Air Force Court of Appeals did not abuse its discretion, does that moot the first issue? I mean, he got 90 days of confinement credit, didn't he?
Yes, Your Honor, he did. That's an interesting question as well, Your Honor, and one that I've batted around myself, whether or not it moots the specified issue of whether
if we answer the specified question in the negative, whether it moots the DuBay hearing question, because what he asked for was three for one credit, and while it's entirely unclear which aspect of the credit the CCA gave was for the post-trial delay and which portion was for the conditions of his confinement, I just wonder what your view is on that.
Whether it moots the certified issue?
No, whether if we answer the certified question in the negative, whether it moots the DuBay hearing question.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so under United States v. Fagan, given that if you were to say that the Air Force Court did not abuse their discretion, there would be no need for a DuBay hearing because the Air Force Court properly had applied United States v. Ginn and determined that there was error and it went to sentence appropriateness. Excuse me. With that, then, I'll turn to the certified issue. The Air Force Court...
One more question, and this kind of lapses over to the certified question. Does the fact that they placed him in solitary solely for the reason of avoiding contact with foreign nationals, is that in and of itself, does that constitute an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 violation in your view?
Your Honor, that would be... I don't know that that rises necessarily to the level of an Eighth Amendment. I would have to investigate that a little bit further, but I think that there is a legal error in placing him in solitary confinement in order to avoid contact with foreign nationals, especially in this particular case when there was evidence that all they had to do was move him to a separate pod. There was a pod ready and open without foreign nationals, and instead they put him in solitary for the amount of time that they did.
Well, then that gets back to Senior Judge Cox's question is whether or not harmless error applies to the government.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, I would have to look into that a little bit further and can definitely get back to the court with a response to that question. Turning then to the certified question, the Air Force Court did not abuse its discretion. Essentially, its conclusions were not arbitrary and capricious, and its findings are fairly supported in the record. And that comes directly from United States v. NIRAD, where this court overturned the Air Force Court's decision in what they determined was essentially an equity decision. That is not what we have here.
What is it? What do we have here?
Here, Your Honor, what you have is the court simply stating that they are considering, that is their holding, that they are allowed to consider all the conditions of post-trial confinement in making their sentence appropriateness decision. They didn't expand Article 66. They didn't step far outside their bounds.
Well, but what they said was, and correct me if I'm wrong, this does not rise to the level of a violation of the Eighth Amendment. It does not rise to the level of a violation of the statute. But we don't like it, so therefore we're going to grant relief.
Well, Your Honor,
what's the standard there other than we don't like it?
Your Honor, the standard is this court, and this was from United States v. Jones, Senior Judge Cox wrote this opinion, that this court will only disturb the CCA's reassessment or decisions in this arena in order to prevent an obvious miscarriage of justice or an abuse of discretion.
Well, but that's not my question. That's our standard. What's their standard?
In determining their sentence appropriateness, really?
Well, in determining that they could grant sentence appropriateness in the absence of either a constitutional or a statutory violation.
Your Honor, United States v. Tardif has interpreted Article 66 to say that there is no predicate holding that an error material prejudices the substantial rights of the accused required prior to a finding under Article 66C of the should power, whether the sentence or findings should be approved.
Well, do you agree that if it doesn't rise to the level of an Article 55 violation or an Article 12 violation, that it is nonetheless legal error to put someone in solitary confinement where they are subject to the restrictions that this person was for no good reason?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It essentially increases the punitive nature of their punishment, increasing their punishment from what it was. I'll address briefly the government's position on United States v. Fagan. The government's argument rests squarely on this court's holding in that case. However, their reliance on Fagan is taken out of context, as the holding only stated that in that case the CCA failed to properly apply the Ginn framework. But the government concedes in their brief on the specified issue that the court did apply Ginn and used it properly. And so Fagan is inapplicable in this decision because both parties agree that the Air Force Court properly evaluated the entire record, properly looked at all the factors and all the facts, determined that there were no competing affidavits and no competing claims, and found while there was no Article 55 violation in the Eighth Amendment, there was still legal error, and they should not approve part of that sentence.
Well, you know, sentence appropriateness seems to me that the alpha of that is what the court adjudges as a sentence.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we're looking at the omega.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what gives us authority to look at the omega?
Well, Your Honor, from this court's perspective, essentially what this court has declared with regard to Article 66 and the CCA's interpretation, or the CCA's use of it, is that it is an awesome plenary and de novo power, that they have essentially a carte blanche to do justice. And that is what the CCA in this particular case was doing in accordance with this court's interpretation of Article 66C.
What's the delta between doing justice, just to clarify, between doing justice and granting mercy? Just if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. In fact, the CCA specifically addressed that, and they said they are not permitted to act in essentially clemency matters. They're not permitted to engage in clemency. But what we look to is whether they abuse their discretion in an arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable manner. And in this case, it's simply not there. It's not unreasonable to determine that this was a legal error and grant some sort of relief under the sentence appropriateness standard. Barring any further
It wasn't that the sentence was inappropriate. It was the conditions of confinement that were inappropriate.
Yes, Your Honor.
And Article 66 allows them to consider that. Is that your argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Barring any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Government?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, before you start so that I don't have to interrupt you, here's my question. Is it really the Air Force's position that it can decide to get rid of its prisons, put military members in civilian confinement facilities, and if the civilian confinement facilities don't segregate them or can't segregate them from foreign nationals, that they can be put in solitary confinement under the conditions this person was, and that's just fine?
Your Honor, given...
reading your brief, but that is your position.
Your Honor, given the framework that's been given to us by Congress, that would be the United States position. And I think, contrary to appellant's argument to this court, United States versus McPherson and Wilson did not stand for that proposition that putting an individual in solitary confinement for purposes of avoiding Article 12 issues and making sure they're segregated from foreign nationals was not inappropriate. In fact,
it suggested that it was inappropriate, and it basically said that the fact that that might happen didn't change how we had to interpret Article 12. We said that's your problem, not our problem.
That's right, Your Honor. What I would say is that this court did not answer that question of whether or not that arose to the level of an Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violation. And I would argue that whether or not the Air Force Court abused their discretion in not finding a violation of Article 55 or the Eighth Amendment was not granted by this court in terms of addressing that issue.
I'm not even talking about Article 55. I'm not talking about the Eighth Amendment. I'm talking about the fact that it's just plain error, right, to set up a situation, right, that there's legal error. I mean, it is erroneous to put someone in conditions of confinement that they've done nothing to deserve solely because you've shut down your Briggs and have not properly worked out something with the Civilian Confinement Authority so that they know not to do that.
Judge Ryan, if those conditions amounted to a violation of Article 55 or the Eighth Amendment, yes.
What I'm saying is, why do they have to?
Because that's the legal framework that's given to the services and to the military in terms of analyzing whether or not post-trial confinement conditions are inappropriate.
But I'm asking you a different question, right, which is it really the Air Force's position that it's totally fine for someone who's done nothing other than do something for which they should be put in confinement to have to be in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day for apparently, in your view, whatever period of their sentence is for, solely because they're in a civilian confinement?
Your Honor, and
let's say he had a 20-year sentence in this confinement facility, okay, can only mingle him with foreign nationals. So in order to avoid that, they have to put him in solitary confinement. Based on your argument, that would be just fine. And the CCA could do nothing to correct it.
Your Honor, my argument is
not an Article 55 violation.
My argument is that it has to be analyzed under the rubric of Article 55 in the Eighth Amendment. And the service court, given the particular case, they can look at the facts and circumstances and determine whether or not an Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violation occurred. And if an Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violation occurred, then yes, the service court can grant relief pursuant to Article 66C.
But you're saying that it's not. You're saying that it's not. You say it's not, and it isn't. You say it's not a violation of Article 55 to put someone in solitary confinement.
And the Air Force Court said, and the government did not contest that finding. This court did not grant review on that issue.
They said that nonetheless it was error for him to be placed in solitary confinement for the reasons that he was, which is your convenience.
Your Honor, I believe that the Air Force Court, what they did was they said that this was an issue they were going to grant Article 66C relief for, but cited no legal standard for there being error. And that's the concern here. And Chief Judge Durbin,
now I want to interrupt you.
You can move on to your argument.
Thank you, Chief Judge Durbin.
Well, before you do, just one short question. Did you study any of the cases back in the 60s which dealt with commingling unsentenced prisoners with sentenced prisoners and what kind of sentence credit they were entitled to and all that sort of stuff?
We didn't, Senior Judge Cox, and largely because the issue of Article 12 relief was not an issue before this court. The Article 12 relief was granted by the Community Authority in Clemency, and so there wasn't much analysis because the issues before this court were whether or not the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals abused their discretion in granting 66C relief for post-trial confinement conditions absent a finding of Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violation, and then the specified issue of whether or not a Dubé hearing should have been ordered. And so there wasn't much analysis done of the 1960s cases regarding relief for the commingling of.
Well, what about the 50s cases? Why did Congress give the boards of review this plenary power? Do you have any idea where the genesis of this was?
I think the genesis of this power of looking at it is because, at least during that time, there was a view that the service courts needed to have this power for a couple of reasons. One is they had to be able to exercise that supervision over courts martial. I believe at the time, and again, given the fact that I haven't briefed this issue, so
Are you arguing that's not valid today?
What I'm saying is that it has to be looked at. It can't be looked at in a vacuum, as this court stated in United States versus NIRAD. We have to look at the language of this court interpreting Article 66C, which describes that broad power. And as Judge Ryan, you held in United States versus NIRAD, this court has admittedly used broad terms when describing the broad power under Article 66C, but it doesn't exist in a vacuum. And particularly in United States versus NIRAD, this court said that you have to marry it up with some other grants of authority that Congress gave, particularly the authority to grant clemency to the Community Authority that's granted as part of Article 60, which is an unfettered discretion to grant relief, but there was the service courts do not have that same unfettered discretion. And as this court held in United States versus NIRAD, it isn't unfettered. and it has to be subject to some legal standard as opposed to equitable principles.
But what I'm suggesting to you is, right, if the CCA looks at what has happened and says they were placed in pretrial, basically in solitary confinement for no good reason other than to keep them from being commingled, right, that's not just equity, right? They're saying that was an error for that to happen. It was an error for the Air Force to allow that to happen, and therefore we don't think that this is an appropriate sentence. How is that just granting equity?
And the reason why it's just granting equity, Judge Ryan, is
I mean, what happens to they're giving sentence relief for unreasonable post-trial appellate delay? I mean, what standard is that?
That standard right there is that's the distinction. I'm glad you bring that up, and that's where we get into United States versus Tardif. What you've got here is what appellate cited to was the second part of Article 59A. Whether or not the error materially prejudices a substantial right. But there's an earlier part. Whether or not there's error, and then whether or not that error materially prejudices a substantial right.
It's not error at all to put people in solitary confinement when they've done nothing under the prison's regulations that would warrant it.
What I'm saying, Judge Ryan, is that the legal...
I don't understand how you can't see that that's error.
Well, the reason why is because this court in United States versus Fagan says that Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment are the framework for how you have to look at this. In fact, an appellant continues to argue that the United States misconstrues this court's holding in United States versus Fagan, but if you look at page 9 of the United States brief, we cited the entire discussion of the Article 66C authority and how that authority is supposed to be viewed in the context of post-trial confinement conditions. We didn't paraphrase it. We didn't read out language. We didn't read out wording. And that tells us.
The issue in Fagan was not this nonsense. It was a straight-up cruel and unusual punishment issue.
And that was
not the basis of the CCA's decision. The CCA didn't decide it because they said, well, irrespective of whether there was this or that or the other thing, it was just plain wrong. Right? They just decided to punt.
They decided to punt and not answer the question. And this court said that, yes, they actually have to answer the question, but the court went further in Fagan and said, not only do they have to answer the question, but they have to answer the question that it was, in fact, a violation, a cruel and unusual punishment, in order to grant 66C relief, which is also consistent with this court or the Air Force Court's published opinions in United States versus Pena and United States versus Towns. Towns was cited by the Air Force Court in their opinion in this case. And in Pena, the Air Force Court does talk about unlawfully increasing a sentence. And they're actually quoting another case, which an appellant excluded those quotations and citations. But what the quote was, it was to a case from this court, United States versus White, which is a 2001 case where this court said that unlawfully increasing a sentence is an Article 55 violation. That's what we're looking at here. And that's the framework that we have to look at these under, is an Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violation. Now, we can certainly get into the debate over whether or not these confinement conditions were inappropriate or not, or appropriate, but the Air Force Court found that they were legal. They were legally permissible, the confinement conditions.
They found that they didn't violate Article 55 or the Eighth Amendment. That's a totally different issue.
Which, Your Honor, the United States position is that finding, that framework, Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment, are the legal framework that's provided by Congress and the Constitution for analyzing post-trial confinement conditions. And under the court's, in the United States view, very exceedingly clear language in United States versus Fagan, a predicate to granting Article 66C relief is finding that violation of Article 55 of the Eighth Amendment.
Article 66C is really very clear, counsel, and based on the things that the Air Force is certifying to this court and the positions and the actions that they appear to be supporting, I'm glad of that fact, really.
Fair enough, Your Honor. And certainly, again, we could have a debate back and forth on that power all day long.
Just continue your argument.
Fair enough, Your Honor.
Counsel, I ask Appellant's counsel or Gay's counsel, I'm not sure who's who here, has a doctrine of harmless error ever been applied to the government?
A doctrine of harmless error is certainly...
What are you asking us to do? He's already served 5 months and 21 days.
Well, Senior Judge Cox...
Seven of which were in solitary confinement.
That's right. 7 days of that were in solitary confinement, Senior Judge Cox. We don't dispute that fact. What we're asking the court to do is we have a published opinion from the Air Force Court, which has effectively said that TARDIF applies to any situation and has effectively said in terms of sentence appropriateness, Article 66C is unfettered in terms of their discretion there.
Well, are you asking us for an advisory opinion?
We are not, Judge Stuckey.
What are you asking for? That's a very good question.
We are asking for you to reverse the Air Force Court's published opinion. The effect of which will be to tell...
Give advice to the Judge Advocate General or something on that line.
Well, Judge Stuckey, the effect of it would be to tell the Air Force Court that Article 66C needs to have a legal standard in order to be applied in any case. And in the context of post-trial confinement conditions, consistent with this Court's opinion in United States v. Fagan, requires there to be a violation of Article 55 of the Eighth Amendment prior to a service court granting sentence appropriate.
Yeah, you said, I understand that. I have one other question. Are the parties in agreement on the first issue? Can we just sweep it aside?
The specified issue, Judge Stuckey, I think in some ways, certainly you can.
That's all I needed. Thank you.
Fair enough.
Counsel, the CCA held that the sentence was inappropriate on two grounds. One was the post-trial conditions that we're talking about now, but the other one was the government's delay in forwarding the record for review. And I'm assuming you're not making any of your arguments today on the Fifth Amendment and Article 55 in regard to that issue. Why don't we just affirm this case on that alternative issue? What's wrong with that issue? Is that an invalid ground?
It is not, Chief Judge Ergman.
So you can give sentence appropriateness relief on post-trial delay grounds?
That's correct.
That's what they did in this case.
They did, in part. Now, the problem is, from their opinion, they didn't parse out where that relief came from. So certainly once they're reversed, in this case, under the United States view, they should be reversed. The case should be sent back to the Air Force Court to make that determination on whether or not what additional or less sentence appropriateness relief should be granted for the TARDF violation. And it's good that you bring that up, Chief Judge Ergman, because I think the TARDF issue in this case really highlights what the United States believes the issue is in this case. In TARDF, it's very clear what you've got is we've got Moreno standards, and there's a finding of an error in violating those Moreno standards, and that's a legal framework for analyzing post-trial delay. And if you find that there is a violation of the Moreno standards, you then have to look at whether or not it materially prejudices a substantial right of the accused. And even if it doesn't, TARDF tells us that a service court may still grant sentence appropriateness relief for that because there is an acknowledged deficiency or legal error or error there, which we believe is missing in this case given the finding of no 55 or Eighth Amendment violation. And a good way to analogize it, I think, is what the Air Force Court did here in United States versus Gay, after they found no violation of Article 55 or the Eighth Amendment, was effectively, it would be the same as in a TARDF situation, post-trial processing. Let's say an easy one, going from action to forwarding the record to the service court, that it took 29 days. The standard is 30 days, it's less than the Moreno standard, but the service court, under their theory in United States versus Gay, could say, well, this took less than the 30-day Moreno standard, but the government did not explain why it took 29 days as opposed to 10 days or 14 days or 20 days, and we don't like that it took 29 days, so we're going to go ahead and grant sentence appropriateness relief under Article 66C. And that's problematic in terms of the practical effects out to the field and the clarity the appellate law is supposed to provide to the field. And what the Air Force Court has effectively said in this case is that post-trial confinement conditions that are permissible under Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment, the government now has to explain those post-trial confinement conditions in any case on the speculative ex ante idea of whether or not a panel of the service court is going to not like those confinement conditions.
But counsel, let me ask you this question. Is there any legal reason, right, that this court couldn't simply say this? You know, where an accused in a civilian confinement facility, right, is placed in solitary confinement, not because of any actions on his or her part, but solely to avoid an Article 12 violation that would be attributable to the government, that it's legal error, and where that happens, and if the CCA thinks it's appropriate, that they should give them a relief. Why couldn't we say that?
The reason why you couldn't say that is because of that missing part at the end of it. And again, this court is free to overturn its own precedent and the language of its precedent in analyzing Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment. But if this court were to go that step further and had it granted on the issue of Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment and said that solitary confinement to avoid confinement for foreign nationals.
I mean, I hope that you don't disagree that being locked in a cell 23 hours a day by yourself is a more onerous condition of confinement than being in the general population.
I think it can be. I mean, I think in Congress, in terms of, and some of this is a problem.
You can't see your family, you can't see your friends, it's more difficult to meet with your, I mean, let's just assume. I mean, it's probably on a spectrum of things, but it could be quite onerous. Why would the government be opposed to someone getting extra credit for that?
Well, we'd be opposed
to that they didn't have to, you know, pay to have a break, for example.
Judge Ryan, we'd be opposed to that given the congressional framework and the finding of a no violation of Article 55 in the Eighth Amendment. And that, I think, is the disconnect.
I'm not asking about that. I'm asking why couldn't we say that?
I think that this court, had you granted on the Article 55 and Eighth Amendment issue, this court could certainly find that that's a 55 violation.
I'm not talking about it being a 55 violation. I'm like saying why couldn't we say we agree with the CCA that this is error, right? And that it was appropriate, that they were not wrong to grant sentence relief.
Judge Ryan, I mean, this court can certainly do anything it wants in terms of an opinion and finding and holding that.
Well, actually, we can't do anything we want, or we shouldn't do anything we
right.
want. I'm asking you, is there any legal reason that we couldn't?
And I think the precedent from this court, particularly United States versus Fagan, I think is contradictory to that, Judge Ryan.
I doubt that this sort of thing was happening at the time that United States versus Fagan was decided, because the Air Force used to have its own bricks.
Well, and certainly, Judge Ryan, it was happening at the time of United States versus McPherson, United States versus Wilson. This court did not hold, as a matter of law, that those were inappropriate.
But we certainly suggested that it was.
It suggested that is an issue, but that it's an issue for the confinement officials to deal with when we're talking about the interplay of Article 12 and Article 58.
Well, counsel, let me just make sure I understand your position, and I think it's a relatively simple position, and that is there can be no sentence appropriate relief under Article 66C for conditions of confinement unless there is an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 violation.
That's correct, Chief Judge Erdman.
And you get that from Fagan.
We get that from Fagan as well as the Air Force Court's published views in United States versus Pena and United States versus Towns.
What if the Air Force Court, rather than affirmatively say or negatively saying, depending on how you cast it, rather than saying we find no violation of 8 or 55, had simply said doing this is screwy and we grant sentence relief, and hadn't said boo about them, then under our powers of sentence appropriateness, we find this sentence to be inappropriate because he was stuck in solitary through no fault of his own, because the Air Force has contracted this all out to the cheapest possible bidder. What if they just said that?
I think that would still be problematic given this court's precedent in terms of how a service court must exercise that Article 66C authority.
Well, but we have given them very broad discretion in sentence appropriateness. We don't get into that.
And what I would say is, again, citing this court's language from United States versus Neer, and I think all three opinions, the majority opinion of Judge Ryan, the concurring opinion of Chief Judge Baker, and your dissenting opinion, Judge Stuckey and NEARAD, would stand for the proposition that certainly they do have a broad power, but it is subject to legal standards, not equitable standards, which I think in this case, however you may view solitary confinement, there was no Article 55 or Eighth Amendment violation in this case, and therefore granting relief was pure equity on the part of the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. And even, I think, Chief Judge Baker's concurrence in NEARAD is somewhat instructive on this point, where he stated that the service court is not required to put their reasoning out there, but they're advised they should, because it aids this court's review
easier
of that issue.
Us.
It makes it easier for this court to review. And the Air Force Court, if they're to be commended for anything, it's that they put their reasoning out there. They own the issue, but it doesn't make it any less of an abuse of discretion in this case.
Of course, in the terms of a, you need a legal hook. Would an Air Force instruction constitute a legal hook?
An Air Force instruction could provide a hook for an Article 55 violation, Judge Olson. I think the Air Force could rely on a violation of an instruction in terms of finding an Article 55 violation. But I think that's the predicate factor, or the predicate finding here, that's missing, and that's a violation of Article 55 or the Eighth Amendment.
So, counsel, just to be clear, it's your position that unless a condition of post-trial confinement rises to the level of a violation of cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment or violation of Article 55, which prohibits flogging, branding, marking, or tattooing, or any other cruel and unusual punishment, or the use of irons, other than for this, that anything else is fair game and they can't correct it. They can't provide relief for it.
I think if it does not fall under Article 55 in the Eighth Amendment, that, yes, Judge Ryan, that's the framework that's been given to us by Congress and by the Constitution of the United States. And that's how this issue has been applied by both the service courts as well as this court and the Supreme Court of the United States in analyzing post-trial confinement conditions. I know some well over time.
What is the exact language of Article 66? It doesn't require any legal standard, does it? It says what should be approved.
That's correct, Senior Judge.
Is there a definition of should in Black's Law Dictionary?
I think the definition of should, it may be in Black's Law Dictionary, but I think more importantly it comes from this court's opinions in United States versus NIRAD, even in United States versus Tardif, although it talked about it in broad terms.
How about Parker?
It very well would be in Parker as well, Senior Judge Cox. But I think it's important to look at that language and how this should be approved, should be analyzed by this court. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals has long been referred to, or service courts have been referred to previously as the 800-pound gorilla. An opinion from this court needs to remind the service courts that no matter how large that gorilla is, it still lives in the zoo, and it's subject to the legal constraints provided by this court as well as the law. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
Counsel, I've been at this business a long time, and when I first got in it, United States District Court judges had, quote, unfettered discretion to sentence people to whatever in the world they wanted to.
Yes, Your Honor.
And after a number of years, hundreds of years, Congress stepped in and said, no, we don't want guidelines, and those were appealable. So now that's what we have. Congress has not stepped in on the Article 66, has it?
They have not, Your Honor. Absolutely.
And so there's no guidelines out there for those courts, is it?
Well, Your Honor, I speaking of Parker, that was one of the cases that we specifically noted, and you said that, you know, the CCAs are, quote, the 800-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to protecting the accused. They have this awesome plenary de novo power, and it is a clear carte blanche to do justice.
And they were given that power in 1951.
Yes, Your Honor.
In response to the abuses they found in World War II.
Yes, Your Honor.
And they didn't put any legal requirements on them, did they?
They did not, Your Honor.
Thank you. Turning
to specifically Judge Ryan, the initial discussion you had with the government counsel, not only was the solitary confinement put in place in this case because of the jail's inability to segregate Sergeant Gay, but also because the legal office called and directed the prison officials to place him in solitary confinement when they learned of the Article 12 violation. That is a key.
Is that a matter of record? I mean, that this is very mysterious.
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the affidavit from not only the appellant, but also his superintendent. And the legal office in their response has never disputed the fact.
Who called?
There's no information on
that. Okay, that's what's
yes,
mysterious.
Yes, Your Honor.
Some voice on the phone said put him in solitary.
Well, and the superintendent.
Some voice on the phone that purported to be from the base.
The superintendent stated that the prison officials, and this is in her affidavit, that the prison officials told her that it was the legal office that called. And
oh, the legal office had called.
Yes, it was. And so that is the, or someone, I think it's that was the indication from her affidavit, was that it was someone from the legal office or from base.
Or from base or the legal office on base. I mean, this whole thing is kind of mysterious.
Yes, Your Honor. And if I could pull up.
I mean, I if you don't have it, I don't want you to take a bunch of time doing it.
Your Honor, it's
you know,
her affidavit.
Back to Judge Stuckey's question of government counsel. Isn't this really moot? I mean, the guy served his time. He's out.
Yeah.
He's on appellate leave.
And that's going to your
heart. They're asking for declaratory judgment or advisory opinion, aren't they?
Your Honor, in this particular case, it's not moot because he would still receive back pay from the time that he was not supposed to be confined. So there is, even though he has served all that time, he would receive additional pay if part of that sentence to confinement was set aside. So it's not moot. Now, additionally, I don't have the citation on me at the time, but I'll happily provide it under Rule 36A. It's a coma case from the 1960s, which I believe, Senior Judge Cox, you were referring to, where this court has held that solitary confinement was an unlawful punishment. And that takes us to United States v. Pena, which the government has relied on. Pena specifically states that when the sentence is increased by the prison officials, then the CCA has the authority to review and provide relief to Article 60 under Article 66C where it's appropriate. That's what this court, that Air Force Court did. They looked at the post-trial confinement conditions, determined that it was an increase of punishment, and provided relief under Article 66C. Now, with regard to the Article 55 and the Eighth Amendment violation, I know the government counsel brought this up, but the appellant specifically did petition this court on that issue, and the court instead specified the issue of the Dubé hearing. And that's why I believe the government and I have spent so much time discussing that issue. But the issues that we're talking about that underlie all of this is whether or not the Article 66C power applies. And what we have, the government has pointed you back to United States v. NIRAD, and I'd point even to Judge Stuckey, your dissent there, where an inappropriate sentence is incorrect in fact. Now, that is what we have here. It's incorrect in fact and law, illegal and inappropriate. And going all the way back to Jackson v. Taylor, that Congress has contemplated that the CCAs have this power to set aside on the basis of the record any part of the sentence because it's illegal or inappropriate. That is what the Air Force Court did in this case. And finally, turning to TARDF, even if TARDF were so limited as the government would have this court read it, it's still the Article 66C that provided the CCA the power to do this in this case. The CCA abided by Article 66C, and they provided relief where they saw appropriate. This is not an expansive step outside the bounds of Article 66C. This court has approved relief granted under that provision in excessive post-trial delays in United States v. TARDF, post-trial confinement conditions in United States v. Towns, that was the Air Force Court, and post-trial processing issues in United States v. Wheelis. That power is something that the CCAs garner, and they have great authority with regard to it, unless there's a clear abuse of discretion and their decision is arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. That is not the case that is before this court. The CCA's decision was reasonable, and it was based on the facts contained within the record. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The court will now be in recess until 10:25.